You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. Now here's Pastor Sandy in Proverbs chapter 1 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Hey, four theologians went on a camping trip. It was just about time to go to sleep when one of the theologians said to the other, he said, "Before we close our eyes tonight, let's look up at the sky. Hey, tell me what you see." The first theologian, he spoke up. He said, "Well, I see billions of stars stretched over millions of galaxies. Yet of all the planets, only Earth can sustain life." The next theologian, he offered his perspective. He said, "I see the massive expanse of space as evidence that God is infinite and we are finite, and we find our significance in his concern for us." Well, not to be outdone, the third theologian, he jumped in. He said, "Well, I see a night like former nights when my life was tortured with trouble. God was with me, though, in the darkness, and the stars now remind me of his faithfulness." Finally, the three theologians, they turned to the fellow who started the discussion and they asked him, they said, "Well, what do you see?" And that's when he said, "I think somebody stole our tent." You know, it's good to think high in holy thoughts, but there's also a real practical side of life. The Bible does address heady philosophical subjects like the meaning of life, but it also gets down to earth. It applies to issues like money and kids and marriage and work and wine and words and beauty. Everything from occupation to temptation to conversation. And nowhere does the Bible get more practical than the Proverbs. I don't think it's an accident that when the Bible was organized into chapters, Proverbs was arranged into 31 divisions. That means there's one chapter of the Proverbs for every day of the month. You know, if you took a chapter a day and you cycled through them 12 times a year, the benefits to your life would be incalculable. Billy Graham makes an interesting comparison. He says, "The Psalms teach us how to get along with God, whereas the Proverbs, how to get along with our fellow man." That may be an oversimplification, but it does emphasize the practical nature of the Proverbs. Take heed to these Proverbs and you will live a better life. Well, chapter 1 begins. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. 1 Kings chapter 4 tells us that Solomon penned 3,000 Proverbs. About 25% of those, or 700 Proverbs, are recorded in this book. That means that we're missing a few. But the ones we do have are packed with a wealth of wisdom. The author identifies himself, it was Solomon, and in the next few verses, he states his purpose. Here are the goal of the Proverbs: to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple or the naive, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Once there was a business executive who was asked the key to his success. He said two words: good decisions. Well, the interviewer, he said, "Well, okay, that's fine, but how does a person learn to make good decisions?" The man answered, "One word: experience." Well, the reporter, he kind of pressed him again. He said, "Okay, but how does a person gain experience?" And that's when the executive replied, "Two words: bad decisions." You know, it's true, experience is the best teacher. But there are two types of experience you can learn from. You can learn from your own experiences, or you can learn from the experiences of others. You see, the fool has to make his own mistakes. Wisdom is willing to learn from others and other people's mistakes. As we're told here in verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. I like to call the Proverbs short statements based on long experience. Hey, why attend classes in the School of Hard Knocks when you can learn from its graduates? Why learn the hard way? Be wise, not otherwise. Solomon is going to share with us some of his wisdom. Now, Solomon continues defining his purpose in verse 6. He says, "To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles." And you'll find that some of the Proverbs are enigmas or riddles. In other words, they're tricky or they're really difficult to grasp. You know, this was true of many of Jesus' parables. You know, they were slippery enough to slide past the casual listener. It took a seriousness, a certain amount of discernment to grasp Jesus' parables. And this is also true of the Proverbs. Hey, thankfully, God makes the gospel accessible to everyone. I mean, the gospel is straightforward and simple. No one can misunderstand. But not all the diamonds of God are just laying on the ground. More often, you've got to dig to get to know certain aspects of wisdom. And wisdom is for those who are willing to dig. Well, he says in verse 7, he states the theme verse for the Proverbs, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Now, this is somewhat repeated in chapter 9, verse 10. There it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Put them both together, then that means that the beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of the Lord. You know, often the fear of the Lord is defined as a reverence for God opposed to a terror of God. You know, the argument goes, well, respect God. That's what he means. We should fear him in the sense that we should respect him. We should reverence him. But we shouldn't be terrified of God. You know, I'm not sure I agree. Yes, God loves us. No doubt about that. But God also loves justice and he loves righteousness. And did you know your unbelief can force a loving God to judge your soul and throw you alive into the flames of hell? Now, don't tell me you shouldn't be terrified of that person. God does love you, but God also loved his only son. And what did he do to his only son? He sentenced him to an excruciating torture and to a hideous death. Jesus was judged not for his own sin, but for the sins of the world. But notice this, God still judged Jesus. And I gotta say to you, if a loving God is willing to judge his only son, why do you think he would have any qualms about judging you if you rejected his grace and rejected his mercy? Hey, if God judged Jesus, God will judge you. And that's a God that I want to fear. God is not to be trifled with. God means business. I relish God's love. I'm thankful for God's love. But I am absolutely terrified of God as well. He is not a God to be trifled with. Jesus, who depicted God as a loving father, running down the path at the first sight of his prodigal son returning from home, is also the Jesus who said in Matthew 10, "Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." When we're to fear God, it means just that, that we need to fear the Lord. Here's how I define the fear of the Lord. It's the assumption toward all of life that God knows better than I do how I should live my life, and that I have an obligation as his creation to seek his will and to walk in his ways. Have you made that assumption about life? Are you living your life from that perspective and out of that assumption? If so, you are fearing God. God makes known his will to me because he loves me, but he's not to be played with or to be trivialized or to be taken for granted. Thus, I fear him. Now notice the second half of verse 7. "But fools despise wisdom and instruction." In other words, you're a fool if you hear God's will, you mull it over, and then you conclude that you know better than an infinite God how you should live your life. You're a fool. Did you hear about the guy who had a flat tire right next to the insane asylum? And as he was changing the tire, a mental patient was standing there behind a chain link fence just watching him. Well, the guy took off all the lug nuts and he put them inside the hubcap. And then when he went to screw the lug nuts back onto the spare, he accidentally hit the hubcap. He knocked the lug nuts off and they rolled down into a sewer drain. Well, he didn't know what to do. He's standing there, he's scratching his head. When suddenly the mental patient on the other side of the fence, he pipes up and he says, "Hey, why don't you just take one of the lug nuts off each of the other wheels and then you'll have enough to attach the spare and keep it on until you can find more lug nuts." The guy was amazed. He said, "Wow, you're pretty smart. What are you doing in an insane asylum?" That's when the guy turned and he said, "I may be crazy, man, but I'm not stupid." Well, here's the point. The person who refuses to fear God, to take heed to wisdom, is both crazy and stupid. Proverbs calls this man a fool. Verse 8, My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be graceful ornaments on your head and chains about your neck. Hey, wisdom is like bling. It's cool, man. It's hip. You shine and you sparkle if you're a wise child who takes heed to his parents. You know, in the book of Proverbs, King Solomon is passing down wisdom to his son. In fact, 23 times Solomon expresses his words to, quote, my son. Solomon wants his son to learn some lessons, not the hard way, but the easy way. He wants his son to benefit from the hard knocks he's been through. Proverbs always reminds me of a recurring scene from the Beverly Hillbilly sitcom. You remember every time Jethro Bodine would pull a boneheaded stunt, Uncle Jed would always scratch his head and he would always mutter to himself, one of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy. Remember that? Well, in essence, Proverbs is Solomon's long talk with his Jethro. Solomon warns his son not to forsake the biblical instruction his parents have ingrained in him. For there will be people who will try to lead him astray. Verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Now, I hope you know that peer pressure is nothing new. I mean, it's not enough for some folks to wreck their own lives. They want other people to follow in their foolishness. The guy who walks off the cliff finds comfort in the fact that other people are going to join him. And though through Proverbs, Solomon wants to give his son some inner anchors so that he can say no to sin's enticement, so that he can build a healthy independence from other people. Solomon wants to provide his son the strength to stand against the current of this world. You know, I read a study done by a team of psychologists headed by a doctor named Ruth Berinda. 10 teenagers were shown 3 straight lines of varying lengths drawn on a board, and they were asked to choose the longest of those 3 lines. Unbeknownst to one of the teenagers, the other 9 were told in advance to pick the line number 2, which was not the longest line. In 75% of the cases, the 10th teenager would buckle under to the pressure, and he would end up agreeing with the majority and denying the obvious. Often the teenager would have a confused look on his face. He wasn't stupid, but his desire to fit in overwhelmed his commitment to the truth. And the teenager fell victim to peer pressure. Actually, it's not just a teenage problem. We are all prone to peer pressure. We're tempted to let what's popular override what's right. This is why we all need to take heed. When sinners entice, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. I mean, these guys are predators. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol or death, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. Sounds like Solomon's kids getting recruited by a gang. He says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. You know, a bird is too smart to fly into what he knows is a trap. When he sees the trap, he flees. That's why we need to teach our kids to be bird brains, to spot the traps and to avoid them before they get snared. Verse 18, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. Wisdom, though, calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. Please, son, take heed to wisdom, Solomon is saying. It's been said the man with horse sense won't trot with the crowd. Now, beginning in verse 20, Solomon personifies wisdom. Obviously, wisdom is a non-human entity, but Solomon speaks of it as if wisdom is a lady. He says, she cries out in the chief concourses. At the openings of the gates in the city, she speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. God is offering wisdom to those who desire wisdom. Solomon, though, bemoans the fact that there's so few takers. He says, turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you because I have called and you refused. I have stretched out my hand and no one regarded because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently. They will not find me because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have known of my counsel and despised my every rebuke. In other words, wisdom is not available forever. That's why you should grasp it while you can. You should avail yourself to wisdom while it's available. You should prepare yourself for the day when you'll need it, because in that day, you may not be able to find it. He says, therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be filled with the full, with their own fancies. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. Wisdom is preventative. Turn away from the truth. Be a fool, and you'll be dead meat. You know, often people seek wisdom only to get out of trouble. But the point of wisdom is to prevent getting into trouble. It's to prevent the damage in the first place. It's been said, what a fool does in the end, the wise man does in the beginning. Take heed to wisdom, and you'll spare yourself much trouble. Well, chapter 2 begins. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Notice this, you don't just bump into wisdom. You know, you don't bump into wisdom like you do an old friend at the grocery store, you know. Oh, hi. Hey, I got wisdom. Now, to know wisdom, you have to search for it like buried treasure. You have to desire it with all your heart. You have to dig for it. You have to want it. You have to desire it. I love the quote from the great French philosopher Blaise Pascal. He said this, man's wisdom must be understood to be loved, but God's wisdom must be loved to be understood. To get God's wisdom, you have to incline your ear, Solomon says. You have to apply your heart. Verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And isn't that great? God doesn't hoard wisdom. He gives wisdom. I love James chapter 1, verse 5. There we're told, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. He goes on, he stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the path of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Notice the Lord is like a bodyguard. You know, whenever you see the president, he's always surrounded by those black-suited Secret Service agents. And you know, if you could see yourself spiritually, if you could look into a mirror and see the spiritual realm around you, you too would be surrounded by the Holy Spirit. He guards you. By angels who, the psalmist says, camp over us. Even wisdom guards you. It guards the children of God. You know, here wisdom is like a, it guards our path. He says, then you will understand righteousness and justice, equity and every good path. When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you. Understanding will keep you to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perversity of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and who are devious in their paths. Wisdom is our bodyguard. And Solomon sees two dangerous enemies out to destroy us from which we need to be protected. One is a man and the other is a woman. Verse 12 identifies the man who speaks perverse things. There is a perverse man who wants to trip you up. But verse 16 gives us a description of the woman who is our enemy. He says, to deliver you from the immoral woman. Here is the young man. Here is Solomon's son. Here is his chief enemies, a man and a woman, a perverse man and an immoral woman. You see, the early chapters here of Proverbs are like a drama. Three characters are vying for this son's allegiance: perverse man, the immoral woman, and Lady Wisdom. Now, Solomon hopes that his son will embrace wisdom. It alone will save him, we're told, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. Men, listen to me, men. There is a loose lady on the loose. She's in a boring marriage. In fact, she's tired of her husband. In reality, she's a spoiled brat. She's just used to having it all. And just to spice up her life and reinforce her vanity, she's out looking for a sexual conquest. She wants to use you just to prove she's still desirable. She doesn't care if she ruins her life and destroys her family. She doesn't care if she ruins your life and destroys your family. She doesn't even care if her husband finds out. She's bitter toward him anyway. She'd like for him to find out just so she could sort of dig in the knife. This woman is on the prowl. And she could care less about her commitments to God or to man. You'll find this woman in interesting places. You'll find her by the water cooler at work. Hey, this woman might even attend our church. You'll find her at the home fellowship. You'll find her at the vacation Bible school. She's always willing to work late. She always pretends to be your friend. She flatters you with lies. And she strokes your ego. She says the things to you that your wife used to say a long time ago. In subtle ways, she lets you know that there's the possibility if you want it. Slowly but deliberately, she sucks you in. This woman has probably brought down other men, and now her sights are set on you. This is why, friend, you desperately need wisdom. Verse 18 should strike fear in your heart. For her house leads down to death and her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. Men, you take the bait, you succumb, and it will ruin your life. Don't you dare say, no one will find out. Just this one time, it won't hurt. Don't be so gullible. Go to bed with her, and something inside of you will die. Your self-respect, your integrity, and something will die in your marriage. Trust will be broken. Perhaps with lots of time and hard work, the damage can be repaired. But trust me, it will be tarnished forever. Listen to this letter sent to Dear Anne. Here's one woman's pain. I want you to feel this woman's pain. She writes to Ann Landers. She says, Dear Ann Landers, my husband and I have been married for 30 years. I was a virgin bride and have been a faithful wife. A young woman, our daughter's age, came on to him and he took her to bed. He was so guilt-ridden and miserable that he told me about it the next day. I forgave him, did not mention it to a soul, and he never saw her again. He believes no harm was done. She thinks no harm was done, but she destroyed me. I am unable to grow old gracefully. I hate every wrinkle and every gray hair. I feel that I will never be able to be as sexually satisfying. We still have an active sex life, but I always feel that he is comparing me with her. And my 54-year-old body is coming in a very poor second. I cry for hours when I'm alone. No one suspects a thing. We now go out with friends and often get told what a super marriage we have. I feel like a fraud. These women should not be allowed to think that they're hurting no one. The damage that trollop did in one night was irreparable.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is teaching his way through Proverbs verse by verse. Immediately following the Psalms, this book keeps the reader engaged and offers wisdom in the form of practical application. Also, like Psalms, it's comprised of many contributors, so there's not just one author, however. Solomon is identified as the primary source. Phrases like "a word to the wise" come from this book of application and suggest a purposeful nature to the text. This should come as no surprise, as every word of the Bible has been written with purpose and is intended to provide insight and direction to us. If you would like to learn more about how to apply these teachings, head over to sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in Proverbs. Pastor Sandy has more to share about how you can apply what you've learned from today's message. So come back for more in our next edition. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.